St. Vincent. That was actor out of work. Very. I'm trying to get an actory, theatery kind of theme thing going today because my co-host today is Nikki Spundy. Hi, Nikki.
Hey.
When's the last time we spoke on air? You think it's about?
I think it's about a year ago. I think it was the last time I was out doing.
And you've been very busy.
Shows. I have been.
Since. So for the uninitiated. So, yeah, Nikki is I'm going to call you multi-talented, Nikki.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Performer, theatre critic, stand-up comedian, and you dabble in burlesque now.
I do.
We might get to talking about that too.
Sure.
So let's start with, so last year you were touring Asexual Healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just recently.
To Sydney and Adelaide.
Yeah. And the Lazy Show was in production, but there was a year ago, there was a lot of procrastinating. I guess that's rather apt, isn't it? But
yeah, it's the thing about it's a show which I've been working on since I was, quite young. It was my first idea for a solo show. I wanted to do this show about being lazy.
Okay.
And it's just been this self-fulfilling curse. It's just kept on, each season something goes terribly wrong because I haven't done a thing. And it just seems like I always curse myself. But what's actually happened, I've got a new season of it coming up because I was going to do another show and then that show fell apart. Now I'm doing the Lazy Show instead. It moved into the gap. But I'm actually very excited to bring it back to Melbourne. I've just done it in Hobart. It's a super fun show to do.
So. What is in the Lazy Show?
It's me talking, engaging with a idea of laziness and what it's about. So I sort of recline on stage. I'm not going to stand up for a show about laziness.
Right. Well, Asexual Healing, you were standing, I remember.
Oh, yeah, I stood up for that.
You stood up for that, okay.
But the Lazy Show, I had to have I've got to recline on a chair or a divan or whatever's available in the venue. And I'll sort of recline and I'll talk about laziness, about putting stuff off. And it's also being, because it's a personal storytelling show like I do and a queer show. So it's, it also talks about the major things you put off, like putting off coming out and that sort of stuff. So it's a variable show that goes from being talking about not liking getting up in the morning to talking about the process of coming out as trans and how difficult that was and how long I put that off for. And then, just how cool sloths are.
Right. Oh, they are cute. The baby ones especially. So, it talks about this, the significant. I hope everyone out there knows what a baby sloth looks like.
If not, go Google it. After the show, Google it.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask you too. I've seen, obviously, Asexual Healing. Mm. And obviously, in the Lazy Show, you must talk about your asexuality in that. Did you just touch on it?
No, it does come up. I try to do that bit of representation in what I'm doing. So, it is actually really nice to do comedy which isn't about identity. I have performed The Lazy Show without mentioning any of the queer stuff just because I just wanted to do a show where that but I generally try to put it in just because it's important to me to see representation on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And if I see someone talking about asexuality on stage, it's really meaningful to me. And, seeing other trans women talk on stage is really meaningful to me. So I do want to make sure that I include that representation in there.
Mm-hmm. What does drive your comedy? What do you find funny?
Truth. I have the mantra of truth in comedy, which comes from China Halpern, an improviser, one of the founders of Chicago Style Improv, which I did for a long time. And she had this mantra of truth in comedy, that the way to get to get humour out of a situation is to express truths. And that's what I always aim for, with comedy. I'm not aiming so much for the gag as to find something which I really want to say, an important truth to express, and then present that, but in a comic way.
Mm. Well, a couple of weeks ago on this show, I was talking to a stand-up comic, and I was asking her about the current climate, in the wake of the Me Too movement, there is this accusation mostly coming from the right, and they tend to be cisgendered white men, that comedy's
they're
dead.
Doing something bad.
Yeah, well, comedy's over because
what?
Well, this is the accusation. Yeah, it's over because we have to be so politically correct, and they've made you know, someone like Hannah Gadsby the sort of poster person for that. Yeah, what do you think of that as someone whose comedy's about truth?
Well, they're trying to the thing with that is they're trying to reframe really turgid, old, hackneyed comedy as being edgy, which it's not.
Right.
Something like the kind of things, you know, which say like Louis C.K. does on stage. Mm. They're not new. They're not edgy. It's like loud male stand-ups have been doing that sort of stuff for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually really tiresome. It's really tiresome to see another man get up and do jokes.
Well, even his new material after taking a year from after the accusations.
Oh my god! Yeah, he came back.
He didn't use any of that. He just went back to the same old stuff that he's been doing his entire career.
Mm.
You would think that he might even be able to use, if you actually are going to come back to the stage, perhaps try to use what happened last year. I mean, he could have done something really good with it. Mm. But,
but he's a guy who does that sort of thing. Like he, you know, masturbates in front of people. He probably is not the smartest to think is.
Yeah, he hasn't done that on stage yet, has he? As far as we know.
I was talking to another comedian. He said that what she thought he was doing was just like trying to cater even more for like at that particular market of the audience who would still be on board, that most of the most progressive-minded people have abandoned him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I actually reckon he's just doubling down on his more offensive stuff because that's now his target audience.
And that would seem, you know, I actually heard some of it. I couldn't listen to the whole thing. And even the person who'd recorded this in the audience, you could hear the kind of audience that it was.
Mm.
And it's the same audience he had before, I guess. Although I used to like his stuff, but it's difficult to like it now.
Well, I mean, comedy certainly hasn't died. It's just changed. It's evolved. Mm. It's got better.
Mm.
And people who are left behind by changes in industries always do that, complaining about things. It's like the same with music. The people are like, oh, there's no good music after, like, insert a date here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's always good music.
Yeah,
it's just new. It's different. It's not what you're used to.
Maybe you have to find it as well. I want to get to talking about theatre with you because we've never really talked about your theatre before on air. So you are really immersed in the theatre world. You're a performer and a critic.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance.
Yeah. So first of all, what is it about theatre that you love so much? What attracted you to it in the first place?
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
As a young closet trans girl growing up in the country, where there was no positive representations of queer at all, I got drawn to theatre for what you then call cross-dressing opportunities. Mm-hmm. That was what, like, dreaming. Well, because the first thing I got into was Shakespeare, and because I'd heard that people were talking about how Shakespeare used to be performed by, like, a lot of drag performers in the day, and it was the first time I'd ever heard of any kind of gender diversity spoken about positively. And not judgmentally. And I was just like, oh, this is what I need to do.
Mm.
I need to do theatre. And so I sort of got into that. So it was actually like it was trying to find ways to exist in the world in a place which I felt like I might find supportive or I might be okay.
Mm.
Sort of what drew me into that world originally.
So you once understudied the entire cast of a school production. I can't believe that. You did the whole... The entire cast of the school production of Romeo and Juliet.
Well, yeah, because I was in high school. I was doing this is absolutely true. I was doing Romeo and Juliet. It was the first serious play I got to do.
Okay,
like I'd been in a few school musicals before, but just being like a sort of a body in the background, really. So it was the first time I was actually going to get to perform. So they got me playing like Paris, like. Juliet's like, you know, like the sort of not the love interest, but the person she's supposed to marry.
Okay.
So I'm paying that, or Gay Paris, as all my friends referred to that to me as in that, because they knew something was going on with me. But anyway, I was playing like Gay Paris, but I was like, I just loved the language so much and I loved the art so much that I just found myself like picking up the language. There's one time when someone elsewhere is sick, not there. Mm-hmm. And they got me to step in and read the scene. And I didn't need the script. Like, they went to get off me the script, and I was just all like, I don't need a script. I just got up
it's and only did, Shakespeare.
Yeah, and I just did this scene for a character who wasn't my character, but I just knew the lines. And people were like, oh, my God, that's amazing. You're just the understudy for everyone. And they were probably exaggerating a bit when they said that, but I took it to heart because I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. I'm the understudy for everyone. I'm going to go learn all of Juliet's lines. And maybe something will happen to the girl playing Juliet.
Yep.
And then people will be like, well, how can anyone know all the lines at short notice? And I can be like, well, I am the understudy for everyone. And then they have to put me on stage as Juliet. And, yeah, that did not happen.
Yep.
That did not happen, but that was my teenage dream.
So you remained an understudy for the production? You didn't end up getting a role?
No, I went on as Gay Paris. I played.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I played that character on stage, but you know, just sort of. I would have rather played the romantic heroine, but I didn't get to.
Well, I was going to talk to you about so apparently female playwrights and directors are still atypical, but this is what gets me wondering then about the Shakespearean gender swapping, and there's been a suggestion that it's a partial solution. Or something that your aforementioned school production you might have understood then. But what's your experience in the theatre been like for you as a woman? Obviously you were attracted, you're saying, because it seemed like a way to express your gender.
Well, it actually... because it was a bit, it's a bit of a double-edged sword like that. Like when I was doing theatre, because, you know, you get cast in roles according to your look and what you do, things like that. And it was actually, the theatre for a long time ended up being a closet trap because I played certain types of roles. And it was very important to me because that's how I sort of learnt how to interact with the world in the closet, was I could learn how to understand that as a character, which as playing. So I could, take stuff which I learned from my characters on stage and apply it to real life. But then you end up sort of caught as doing that, and that's now your career, that's now your art.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you do these things. So actually, I really enjoyed it when I broke free of theatre and got into doing improv where you can, you know, play characters of whatever gender, whatever age, whatever you like.
Mm.
Getting into doing comedy where I just, perform your own perspective. And it's like theatre has all this amazing sort of gloss as being a progressive and an open and a free environment, but there's actually there's deep veins of traditionalism in there, which you can get trapped in if you're in it. So,
Would you say that the theatre has been a queer friendly space?
Look, for all the queers who do it,
yep.
You would think it could be it could be queer friendlier.
Well, queer being, obviously it's a broad term, really. There's under queer, there's a lot of different identities. So, you would think that, wouldn't you? So it's not necessarily the case.
Yeah, it's it's an industry which has always relied on a lot of queer talent to keep it going. And certainly some sectors of it are very queer friendly. But, there can also be like that. Still that level of traditionalism and heteronormativity still exists within that, within the art. So it's not, it wasn't, I think it was probably a lot easier to come out in theatre than it would have been in a lot of industries.
Right.
In terms of being able to rely on support, but it still wasn't as easy and free as you might think.
Have you come across many queer writers and directors in the theatre that you've worked in? And also the theatre that you review?
Well, writers and directors, I mean, that's one of the things that a lot of those roles still get hogged by straight cis white dudes.
Mm-hmm. Dudes.
And, which is a sort of a frustrating kind of thing after a while. And you see, to actually make progressive work, you generally need to go out and make your own stuff. You need to do things Hot Brown Honey did when they created their show.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a bunch of brown women decided, we're sick of trying to fit into this other system, which is not going to make space for us, so we just need to make our own work.
Mm.
And that's sort of the realization you get after a while. I think most, you know, you're constantly working, like the system is still controlled by a certain demographic. And if you're not in that demographic, it's easier to make your own work than to try to fit in it. Like with reviewing, I think I tend to, like where possible, I tend to focus on work that was created by female artists. Like I like going to see really strong feminist works like, say, The Rebels, Theatre Company, or things like that, you know, which are run by women creating feminist work. And I always found that, you know, like there's more interesting theatre coming out of groups like that. And I always found both as a comedy critic and as a theatre critic that I always found that the work that women are doing was more interesting. And I think anyone who's coming from a slightly outsider status as women, unfortunately, can still be within those worlds. If you're coming from an outsider status, you're outside of the normal tropes and the normal conventions of those, and you're automatically bringing something fresher to the work.
I was reading. So you studied the VCA.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
did you do
film at VCA?
Film there. Okay.
Yeah, I've done a whole bunch of different things.
Okay. What else did you study then? I didn't know that you.
Oh, I've studied journalism, which is like fed into the critic thing, and I did film, and I've got a degree in psychology somewhere in the background as well.
What? Where did that come from? It came from
Canberra.
Okay.
It's given me a good like 10-minute set.
Oh my god! I reckon
for comedy about.
So have you practiced as a psychologist?
No,
have you done? No.
I've worked. I did work in health for a bit. Yeah, I did a bit of that. But everyone's got a muggle job. We've all got our muggle life in the past before we become artists.
All right. Well, we'll get to that maybe another day. I'm actually going to play. I'm just going to do a couple of quick CSAs, and then when we come back, we'll continue talking about this for a little bit more. I think also I want to ask you about the burlesque that you're dabbling in.
Yeah, sure.
We'll be back in, I reckon, like a minute. Welcome back. This is She Bop on 3CR with Yvette and Nikki.
Hey.
So we were talking about theatre before. Mm-hmm. I wanted to move on to burlesque, which is that a new thing that you're into?
It is. And it sort of came from, like, I got into it partly out of, like, my frustration with the comedy world being so, always so male-centric and feeling I was always sort of pushing uphill a bit there. And so I just wanted to get involved in an art form which was... you know, it's entirely female-centric, femme-forward like that. And that's burlesque is amazing like that.
Mm.
Like, it's almost all women. There are a few burlesque artists, but it's mostly women.
Mm.
And it's just a very sort of empowering and celebratory space.
Is it... I mean, my understanding of burlesque would have been that it would have been a fairly white, cisgendered domain. Is it a queer-friendly space? Is it queer?
I'm not, I think I'm the only trans girl, like, in my school, at least, but it's, like, it was instantly welcoming.
Mm-hmm.
There was never any sort of hurdles to jump over or anything like that. And from, like, people I know who have done sort of burlesque in other places, whatever, I've always found the world very welcoming. Like, everyone's a bit of, again, because it's a bit of an outsider art. So it doesn't matter if you're a bit of an outsider.
Okay.
And, yeah, I certainly know other, like, non-binary performers and, you know, other queer performers and stuff like that. And those personal things never seem to be an issue.
Mm.
And one of the great things about it is that... Because part of what burlesque is, of course, it's taking those traditional notions of sexiness. Like, it takes sort of those retro striptease and things like that. But then takes female control over it. So you're not doing it for the male gaze, like the original dancers might have been done. It's done as a celebration of femininity. And it's a celebration of all types of bodies. So you get people with all different body shapes, all different ages. And that's celebrated on stage. The diversity is celebrated on stage, which is one of the most beautiful things about it.
It's heavy on the comedy too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of say, like, I'm working towards becoming the mistress of all vaudeville arts because stand-up and burlesque both come out of that vaudeville.
Of course, yeah.
Theatre. And so they're very related actually, and I found that they both sort of feed into each other.
Mm.
Like, it's, you know, there are great artists out there. One of my inspirations was, say, Clara Cupcakes, if you've ever seen her.
Clara Cupcakes.
She's amazing. Okay. She's
Is she currently performing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. But she does comedy shows, but she's also done a lot of burlesque, and they're a kind of a mashup of the two genres.
Mm.
And she was one of the artists who really inspired me to make my own shows and to sort of, you know, I wish I could have an aesthetic, anything as fabulous as hers, but that's the kind of thing I'm sort of working towards, and I love those. All those different art forms all play into each other.
You mentioned femininity. I was reading a quote, I was reading some stuff about Dita Von Teese, so I think this was last year, and she was asked about what attracted her to burlesque in the first place. And she said that as a little girl, she was enamored with, you know, the movie stars and how beautiful they were. But she quickly realized that it was a construction, that this glamour, it's artificial, that it's man-made, probably not the best term. And when she was quizzed on it further, she said something really cool that I hadn't thought about before, that she actually loves man-made beauty because, for instance, when she walks the streets of Paris, she looks up at the buildings and the fountains, and she loves that kind of man-made beauty more than the beach. She grew up in California. Yes. She loved that more than the beach, you know, like a natural beauty. So I was wondering, like femininity in burlesque, it's kind of, does it become, I guess it becomes an empowering thing.
Mm. But I like both natural and constructed beauty.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think like there's one value on one or the other. It's like, because I'm the same, like when you see something beautiful which people have created, whether that's an artwork out in the world or whether it's a look that someone's created for themselves, then I think it's fabulous that somebody has put intention and energy just into the creation of beauty.
Right.
Like, I think that's something, there is something very powerful about that. I don't think it loses any value by being constructed or...
Yeah, like I guess it's not talked about so much in that way, which is why, you know, to hear Dita say something like that, it's not a common thing. Normally when people talk about femininity, it's usually in the negative. I don't know.
Well, I'm all for all types of beauty. Like, I'm a super fan of, you know, like blogs where women are showing off their hairy armpits and being all like natural. And I'm a super fan of Dita Von Teese and that whole like hyper femme.
It is, you know, very hyper femme.
Yeah. It's like, I think, there's so many different forms of beauty.
Of beauty.
And they're all... all worthy of celebrating.
Glamour as well. Some are more glamorous than others. before we leave, tell us about the show that's coming up in the Melbourne Comedy Festival. So we're not there yet, but you're working on it now, right?
Oh, my God, yes. I've been working because I wanted to do a wedding show because it's legal for me to be married now.
Right.
After that big horrible thing we went through in 2017.
Yep.
It's finally legal for me to be married. And so I'm thinking about, well, do I want to get married?
I thought you were about to announce your engagement on there.
Wow, I found my one true love. I did find my one true love. But my one true love is cake. So I'm going to marry Cake.
Nice.
And that's like, that's the idea for the new show. It's called The Cake Bride. And I am going to marry my true love. Who is a dessert.
Okay. Well, we'll have to have you back to talk about your love, your first love, maybe your greatest love, which is cake. I'll have to ask you what kind of cake. Maybe we'll talk about it in the show. but we are out of here, everyone. Thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome, Evan.
We'll have Nikki back for sure. There's always something to talk about. This is for you, by the way, Nikki. This is Won't Take Me to the Theatre by Doris.